Welcome to a special edition of Blog Talk Radio. This week, we have also a special session, I guess. We're not usually here in August, so it's kind of different being here in the summer. But with me today at FDIC, I have the founders of a company called 3AM Innovations. And to my right, I have Patrick O'Connor, Ryan Litt, who's the CEO. I guess you're the president now. And Steve is the... I don't know what you want, Steve.
Director of Sales Development.
Director of Sales. Steve and I actually worked together. We were in a probie class together in 1986. August 2nd was our anniversary yesterday. 35 years, but you bailed on me. So yeah, I'm still on a job. You're not. So
I couldn't keep up, Danny.
So anyways, 3 a.m. So I met these guys. You were there the first year I met you guys. I don't know how many years. I have no
time.
It was 3 years ago. And I was walking the floor. Just doing like I always do. And what attracted me to them was they had this crazy pallet wood kind of stand, you know, and that's my hobby. I do a lot of work on pallet wood. So I came over. It was very, really nice. Nice job on that, by the way. and then I asked, so what are you guys all about? And then you told me what you were doing. You were doing the hopefully potentially firefighter tracking, right? Which is a big problem today in the fire service. And you got my attention. And I was like, wow. I said, I really like that, you know? And from that, I said, listen, if you ever need anything, right, you know, I'll be more than willing to help you guys out. And the relationship has kind of grown over the years. I'm still with the FDNY and hopefully soon to be deputy chief, but I'm very happy sometimes to advise you guys when you need help. So anyway, so here we are 3 years later, and I know you guys have some exciting news. So just for the benefit of our audience, Ryan, why don't you just give us a quick snapshot of what 3AM is all about?
Sure. So we've built a system that we call Florian, and actually speaking to the earlier years when we first met Danny, it was very much inspired by some early conversations that we had. And we're really setting out to protect those who protect us as a core mission. I think that's maybe fairly general. But so specifically, we have built a platform, an adaptive tactical platform that's designed to drive simplified, actionable intelligence to commanders like yourself. And we believe that, you know, technology needs to be a silent partner. It's never going to fight a fire, but it can help to take in all of that information that you guys are constantly bombarded with. And that's our mission. Take it, simplify it, give you what you need, and that is it. And as we always say, our little phrase is optimizing your heads down so you can maximize your heads up. No one's intending to stare at a screen, but if you do, it better help you. And that's our goal.
Right. So I think I vividly remember something I might have said to Patrick. I said, just do me a favor. Don't make my job harder. Yes. Right. Yeah. I want you to actually make my job easier because I don't want to be bogged down looking into screens and get distracted, because as an incident commander, we all know that there's so much going on, you know, especially when it's really on, when fire is out a few windows and radio reports are coming over. And as you could tell by the heightened, like Steve, you know, and you could tell the difference when it's real and when it's just, you know, like kind of
just a basic run.
So, you know, there's a lot going on for the incident commander. And the last thing we need is to be bogged down with technology, you know? So I really appreciate the fact that you guys are making our job easier, you know, in a sense. So, you know, one of the things I have to say from my own experience is that this whole idea of a missing firefighter is something that gives me a lot of concern. You know, I had an incident a few months ago. We had a fire, I guess it was in February or March. It was a three-story private wood frame. And it was really, I couldn't even see the front of the buildings. That's how bad it was, you know. And there were people trapped, we were getting reports of people missing, and et cetera, et cetera. And as that goes, things got a little very chaotic very quickly. And one of my officers, you know, responding to the call for people trapped, you know, the apartment, let's say, was cut up into, like, they did some alterations to it that, you know, we didn't expect.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, I'm at the command post with the deputy chief, and the deputy chief, Joe Dunleavy, he says to me, he says, Danny, we just got a mayday. I didn't even hear it because I was so caught up in the moment. And I was like, I couldn't breathe. I was like, it was real. I knew it was real, you know? And, okay, we got a May Day. I said, Joe, you run the fire, right? I'll handle the May Day. Or vice versa. Actually, it was the other way around. I said, you handle the May Day. I'm going to keep running the fire. That's right. That's what we did. So Joe took care of the May Day. We activated the RIT team. And it had a very successful outcome very quickly. But that's some sheer terror, that 1 minute, you know? And what you guys are doing, I really appreciate the fact that you're working very diligently in trying to solve this problem, which is, you know, it's one of these, like Graham, what's his name? Graham, right? He comes out here every year. Graham, I can't remember his last name, but he talks about low frequency, high impact, you know, and a missing firefighter is one of those things that does not happen a lot, but when it does, oh boy, like you have to be ready. I know that you were inspired by something that happened in Buffalo, was kind of the impetus of this whole Florian 3 a.m. network. And it's actually grown, but we'll get to that in a little while. But, you know, so anything that we can do to assist the incident commander in dealing with these May Day situations is for us a blessing. So I brought Steve and I were probies together. He went to Brooklyn. I went to the Bronx, and then you wound up coming to the good borough. You came to the Bronx when you were a captain. You saw the light, right? You said, I got to get to the Bronx. And you came up to the boogie down.
What are they all talking about here in the Bronx?
You came up to the boogie down to the real place, you know, and then you had gotten injured after 9/11, and now you're kind of helping these guys out as well. And I recommended you to these guys, and now you're kind of really firmly entrenched in the company, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And I'm grateful to them for, you know, letting me be a part of it. It's really an exciting time. It's something that you don't get a chance to do too often in the business world when you have an emerging technology like this, like something that could be a game changer all the way down. And it's something that isn't used right now. It's not out there. And it's something that's just going to help all commanders and all firefighters throughout the industry. And I see this really, really making, and it's hard to say like this, but making the fire scene safer. And by efficiencies, the efficiencies that this brings to a response just helps cut down any kind of mistakes that might happen, or not mistakes, but something that is unforeseen,
like an oversight.
And an oversight,
it happens very easily,
and it happens all. Yeah, so yeah. This helps avoid that just by the basic ability for when you're responding to have a 3D map in front of you. You can see the building you're going to in 3D, and you can see what kind of hazards might be there before you even get there, instead of showing up in front of the scene and not, you know, just knowing the address but not knowing the building until you finally get there. This helps with that. While you're responding, you actually can start doing your size up while you're going.
So, you know, what I like to say all the time is, like, information, knowledge is power, mm-hmm. right? And when Steve and I got on the job in 86, we didn't have, what didn't we have? We didn't have computers. You know, we had that old, looked like something out of the 50s, that teleprinted machine, you know, and everything was over the radio. You know, and
not even many radios.
Flintstone car, you know, the whole thing. So, you know, it was a little old school.
And even then, though, the radios, very few people had radios.
We didn't have, right. A lot of the firefighters didn't have them. I didn't have one. I carried the can most of the time. I never had a radio.
No.
So there was all this, it was like this information void. Like, it was just there was just very few people had radios. That, you know, everything was on the dispatch talking on the department radio. So, one thing that a lot of the guys in my company would pride themselves on, you could give them address, like, hey, 400 Brook Avenue. Like, yeah, that's a 20-story fireproof building. You know, we go there all the time, box 2186, whatever it is. You know, so, you know, in a sense, too, even step back another generation where we had the bells, you mm-hmm. know, and the voice alarm, and we had the running board and 2186 or 2172, Crimmins and 142, you know, the building. You know, so it forced the firefighters to really know their area. But this takes this, I think, to another level. Like, when I saw it, and, you know, we'll get to Boston in a second, but, you know, seeing a map of your response area, right? So instead of like getting in the car and trying to read the SIDS information, the critical information that we send over, it's like a Twitter, you know, and trying to visualize the building. Had I been there before? Do I know the building? Now it's like you turn on the rig, I guess, and you get a, boom, you get a picture of the
HVAC units, air shafts, you get everything of it.
And I tell you, I can't even tell you how critical that is. Like just the fact, like sometimes, like I know in my district alone, in the Boogie Down, in the South Bronx, we have a lot of these kind of attached buildings, you know, and they have these shafts right in the middle. Yeah, you can't see from the street, you know. And could you imagine, like, you know, you get a call for a fire in a whatever, three-story, and then, you know, the chief was looking at it like, hey, guys, listen, be aware. You know, we have shafts. Mm-hmm. And then he knows, too, to look for extension, right? Because
auto exposure
mm-hmm. or even extension into the you know, into the building next door, either exposure on either side. I mean, that's tremendous because that's one of the things that I'm always doing, right? When I get on scene, you know, I get with the firefighters that go to the roof, all right, battalion three, the ladder, you know, 4-8 or 4-2, you know, give me a report from the roof. Okay, yeah, chief, we got a shaft, interior shaft, we got fire out the windows. Now, you know, you're looking at it on a map. Yeah. You see, you're getting a kind of a...
You can even look at it in Street View. You see it directly in Street View between Bing or Google Street View.
So besides the maps, what are some of the other attributes of the flooring system? I think hydrants are, you have something going on with hydrants as well.
That's overlaid in the map. So, yeah, so while you're responding, you know, and my joke is always hydrants on a stick, because as you're responding, they put the hydrants higher so that it doesn't get lost in the wash of the roadway. So hydrants up, visible. So as you're responding, you can see the hydrants that you might want to go to. Also, it helps with the ability to put a hydrant out of service. So now it's really important for a first two engine officer and chauffeur to know if that hydrant's out of service. They know they have to stop short or they know they're going to be going to the next one. And they know that before they get there. So instead of pulling up and finding a hydrant that you know, and sometimes in the city, we always did the discs on it. Mm-hmm. Other departments use other ways of marking the hydrants out of service, but you don't see that till you're right on top of it. Mm-hmm. With this now, as you're coming in, you already know in front of the building that hydrant's bad.
Yeah.
Then you could also call for if you think you're going to need a relay or something.
I think the thing that's interesting with all the different departments that we work with, how troubled the even hydrant inspections can be. They're like written locations and mm-hmm. you go to the corner and it's actually on the other side.
Yes.
And trying to feed that information back to the utilities and making sure that everyone's operating on the same data mm-hmm. is super challenging. And it seems so simple in Florian. You literally walk up to the hydrant with the 3D map and it's right in front of you. You tap it. There's no question that that's where it's located. So just like small things like that, that translate from what you've talked to me about and so many others, that you have real-time, up-to-date, hydrant-driven information so you're not spending time to hit some hydrant that is not going to help you when you need it most.
To actually take it a little bit further, when your alarms actually accelerate and they go higher, and you're on a third alarm, fourth alarm, one thing that also we could do is you could, at your station, look in, and then you could actually, with a spark, into it, and you could see what hydrant's already in use. You mm-hmm. could actually now make a plan before you even leave the apron.
I see
engine 28 is already at that corner. I see the ladder 10 is around here. When we mm-hmm. come in, let's pull up Street View. Look, there's a chain link fence. We could actually get over there. Let's run into on the you know the B side. And now you mm-hmm. could actually make a plan of exactly how you're going to go off of everyone else currently operating, existing at the scene, and how you're going to come and help.
Yeah. That's incredible. I remember when I was a very new lieutenant, right? I got promoted in 95, and I was mostly in a truck company in the squad. And this chauffeur in 45 engine, this guy, Bobby Straub, had like 30 years on the job or whatever. And I remember going to a fire with him, and I was like, no, the fire's over here or whatever. And he's like, nope. He says, we're taking this hydrant over here, because those old school guys, they knew the hydrants. Mm-hmm. You know, they guys like him, Richie Bonacorsa, like in 73 engine, they know their hydrants, man, you know. And he told me, he says, well, you know, if I get on this hydrant, we're all on the same main. Mm-hmm. But if I'm on this hydrant, I'm on a cross-connected main.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get more water at that hydrant. And that exactly. ties into what you're saying about exactly. these multiple alarms, because in New York City, we have a satellite unit that goes on a second alarm, right? And they're basically the water resource officer, right? Mm-hmm. So it's their job, really. The chief is supposed to say, like, hey, Lou or Cap, you know, like, what are you thinking? And like, okay, yeah, you know, use the, this one's a 48 inch main on Southern Boulevard, whatever it is. We're going to use that one, you know, because we have a taxpayer, whatever it is. So that hydrant information is like beyond belief. You know, this chauffeur I was talking about, Richie Bonacorsa, he was a fireman in 73 engine when I was in 17 truck. And he was still a firefighter when I was chief and still am in the 3rd Battalion. He just retired like last year. I think he aged out. And this guy, Richie, was so good. I mean, there was just nobody like him. He's unparalleled, you know. And we had a job. It was a good brownstone. We had a fire on the first and second floor. And, I mean, it was just – it went like clockwork, this fire. You know, they got a unit citation and everything. And we were critiquing it afterwards. And I was talking to the captain. He had the job, you know, and it's like – I said, man, you guys knocked it out of the park. He goes, yeah, Richie knew that hydrant was out of service. But not many chauffeurs know which hydrants in their district are out of service. Because what we're supposed to do, right, we put it on the running board at the house watch, you know, okay, hydrant in front of, you know, Beck Street, 762 Beck is out of service. And then hopefully the guys will remember.
Hopefully it alleviates that. But then, like you talked about before, as being a cover and an officer. The other part is the not, you know, you're not going to know your area. And sometimes you get a detailed chauffeur in from outside who doesn't know the area. So this just really helps with that also. It also helps because we have a turn-by-turn instruction also. So how it used to work is that you got the box, and if I was a covering lieutenant or captain, and now I have a detailed chauffeur, you had to run to the house watch, look up how route cards on indexes, you know, by box, and then come back and look at it and try to read it off while you're responding. Now, very simply with Florian, you can just give a voice command and also have Florian give you turn-by-turn instructions right there. So if you're a covering officer, now that's a little bit of weight off your shoulders of knowing where you're going, where the box is.
You know, there's a lot to be said for that, because we had a fire, I don't know, about 2 years ago. It was a two-story brick attached. And we had a covering chauffeur in the engine, first two engine, your old company. And he was from another company. And, you know, I just assume that, you know, they're going to respond the way I expect them to respond, right? Go down Hunts Point Avenue, make a right, blah, 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 whatever. So for some reason, the truck went one way, the engine went the other way. Mm-hmm. And now we're already starting to get behind the eight ball, because now we're going to have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So now the chauffeur, because he was not familiar with the block, he kind of had to come in the wrong way. So now the back step is facing the wrong way.
Right.
And the fire was coming out the windows on the Delta side, the fourth side, just one window. All right, cup of tea. I'm looking at the captain. They're stretching the line. They're going to be up there in about a minute, and you know, open a line and knock it down, and like this. And I'm looking, and I'm like, okay, now it's out two windows. Now it's out four windows. Now it's through the roof, and there's still no water. And finally, I politely said to the second new engine, I said, would you please get me water? You know, and you know, it wound up going, I think the deputy wanted to give a second alarm, and I was just like, we're good. We'll just give me an extra engine. We'll be okay. But the point being is that something very simple as just a wrong turn can create this whole series of, like, it's almost snowballs into like a domino effect. Like one thing goes wrong, then two, then four, then in my time on the job, the whole time I've been on the job, anytime that we've ever had any problems, right, big problems where we have firefighter fatalities or civilian fatalities or whatever, usually if you root the cause, if you boil it all down to what the problem was, it's water. And just the fact that you guys are on top of that hydrant and the turn by turn, you kind of glanced over that. And again,
no morses.
The turn, well, the turn by turn.
Well, to actually advance on the turn by turn, knowing where the other apparatus are. So that's
another
thing.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. We found that a lot of people only, or a lot of, you know, other softwares only give the dispatch or the chief the AVL. So they're the only ones who actually can see where the other apparatus is. We give it directly down to the lieutenants and the image. And we actually have a story. One of the departments we're working with, they were going to a call. It was two ladders. So the first two ladder was out of quarters and they were coming from a different direction.
Yeah.
Well, the second ladder saw that because they saw the dot on the screen coming and they repositioned themselves. So they had better placement And they did it all on their own. No chiefs, no one had to give them instructions. They saw where the other ladder was, and they made the decision on their own. And as you said, snowball, small things get bigger. Well, now they have better placement, optimal placement, rather than having to actually squeeze around or get
through. And two trucks had three sides of the building, which is exactly
what you want. That, to me, is just mind-boggling. Because
it's simple, but it's a huge, huge thing.
Like, just the mere fact that they would, like, everybody's on, it seems to me like with this system, that with the flooring system, that everybody is reading from the same sheet of music. We're all on the same page. So everyone knows where everyone is. And that's a great point. I mean, that officer that did that, I commend him, because I can't tell you how many times that things happen where someone's out on building inspection or they're coming from another box or whatever. Next thing you know, I have the truck in front of the building. Now I have the engine, and now I have another truck that's totally blocked out. And now here we are. We all know where we're going. And, you know, we need that cushion when we're responding, because, you know, we have this like small window of time, right, to get it right. Because it's not like, you know, I always say this about firefighting. It's not like we're in a conference room and then like we all, okay, listen, at 4 o'clock today, we're going to have a fire on Southern Boulevard and 156th Street. You're going to take the Bravo side with your ladder. You're going to take the hydrant, you know, and we're going to all plan this out. This happens like that.
Right.
And what you guys are doing is giving the chief and all the officers the tools to really make these decisions much better.
Another thing that was inspired in a large facility fire was location. So speaking of turn by turn, most turn by turns bring you the front door.
Right.
And this particular chief told us how much valuable time that he got when responding units came to the front, and he had to redirect them on the back. And this was a very large facility, and it took upwards of minutes to relocate and restation. And so much more of the structure had become involved by the time that happened. So we have the ability to drive very specific coordinates. You can send people to exact spots, irrespective of Google Maps or whatever turn by turn. It's going to take you to the exact place that you need to be stationed. Small things, but again, as you've said, and as so many chiefs have said, like, seconds are absolutely everything. And if you have to redirect, you're gonna lose.
I can't even tell you how important that is. I'll go back to when I was a captain. So this had to be probably back in, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. I was working in a truck company in a towel lab, right? I was working in a towel lab. And when I came on a job, I was in 17 truck, we were towel lab. And it was very normal, very common that, like, you know, we had a lot of vacant buildings, right? So, you know, Steve will tell you in Brooklyn too, we had vacant buildings. You know, you want that towel ladder.
Towel ladder in position. Need to be there.
You need that towel ladder in the right position, you know. And a lot of times, you know, I remember responding, you know, and I hear my officer, the captain, call the dispatch, hey, 17 to the Bronx. I said, you got any special instructions for the towel ladder? Yeah, 17, you know, respond in on 143rd Street and Cypress, and, you know, take that. The chief wants you to, in this part of the building, you know, whatever. Okay, 10-4. And it saves all that time, right? So all this time is being saved because we had that direct communication. I don't see that happening as much anymore. I had a fire now 20 years later. I'm a captain, and I called a dispatcher. I said, okay, ladder to the borough. I said, any special instructions? And nope, just, you know, report to the command post. Now I have a towel ladder. This towel ladder is a weapon that we need in these big fires, right? We had row frames going. We had a whole series, like five frames going, right? So sure enough, I did what the dispatcher said. I pull up to the command post. You know, we go to the command post. I walk up to him, and he's looking at him, and he goes, is it like, I could see he's like frazzled. He's like, Danny, get that blah, 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 blah. Over there on the two side, you know? And so now I had to go back, you know, and I had to tell the chauffeur. Now we had to get around parked cars. And then by this time, the fire had already taken another building, you know. And could you imagine if we had something like this? Like me in the firehouse, like I see the whole thing going on, like, and the chief just types it. Okay, you know, ladder one,
right,
take the Bravo side and set up your towel lot. I mean, come on.
You kind of just touched on something too, is the ability to have remote assist. It doesn't have to be the actual chief or IC in the field doing it. They could have someone back at your alarm office with, you know, a light duty person or someone.
Well, in some departments, when the alarm's raised, they'll send a chief actually to the fire alarm office to help a little bit, but they don't have the tool sets to coordinate, right? And so if we can get and enable that, I think that makes a ton of sense. And as you're saying, saving those valuable seconds, that's what it's all about.
And also just having that situational awareness right off the bat, because the other aspect of this, there's so many things that we can go into with Florian. But one of the other things is scribbles. So scribbles, it gives the chief access to a simple pen on the map. Mm-hmm. And they can write, so right off the bat, just if they don't touch it again, they could put the exposures that they want. So if you have a building that's taking up almost a city block or a large structure, you can set which is A or one, you know, mm-hmm. B, C, D, you know, 2, 3, 4, right off the bat. Now everyone responding sees that and they know exactly what's the A side of the building, instead of having to guesswork or wait for everyone to come in and start to put it over the radio and confuse people. So because even that, even over the radio, you know, some people have a tough time just visualizing exactly where that's going to be. So if you just draw it right on the map and everyone sees
and
it.
Everybody sees that.
100%. Every apparatus as they're responding sees what was designated A, B, C, D. Or 1, 2, 3.
I think the thing that was really important to us too is making sure it works on those machines that a lot of officers think are dead weight. Most of them say it should be their coffee coaster for the machine that they actually have in the rig. They're mm-hmm. saying that it's too slow, it's too old, it doesn't do anything useful. And so for us, it's about transforming, but what if it was? And so now for that complete awareness, to your point, that not only chiefs see, command centers see, but even in the rig, you're seeing the same and operating from the same information. Really important for us.
So once we're on scene, right, you know, now we are getting, it's getting a little complicated, but, you know, like for all this stuff, but this is all happening as we're responding, right? But now we're on scene, you know, and one thing I could see the value, I know that you could make zones, right? Yes. Let's say. So I know for myself, my own experience that, you know, a lot of times we get these taxpayers, right? That's a 1 or 2 story strip mall type, but class type 3 construction. And the biggest problem that we have in these types of buildings is that parapet wall in the front, mm-hmm. because it's sitting on top. All this weight is sitting mm-hmm. on top of a lintel, and, you know, a cubic foot of brick weighs about 100 pounds. So multiply that by whatever, you're talking about a lot of weight. And mm-hmm. we've lost firefighters from the parapet wall collapse, right? So, you know, sometimes they could curtain wall, they could just flat out mm-hmm. collapse like a 90 degree. And this is a major concern, this collapse zone in front of the building. Mm-hmm. And what I could see, and sometimes you pull up and you can't see the front of the building. There's so much smoke and fire. It's just
especially
billowing out.
Summertime right now with the humidity.
Right. So, with the, everything's staying down. So like I have trouble, and you know, you got so much going on. You tell an engine company, hey, engine one, you know, do me a favor, get a 2.5 into that exposure, you know, or just keep the line, that 2.5 on the, you know, into the store. And, you know, then you get distracted. You look over here and you want to set up a towel out or whatever. And next thing you know, they're in the collapse zone, right? Mm-hmm. Now, engine one is in the collapse zone. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't see them in the collapse zone because mm-hmm. it's obscured by the smoke. But yet, I'm sure that if you set up some sort of perimeter mm-hmm. and said, okay, we're going to call this collapse zone with your scribbles. Now I see these dots or whatever in that collapse zone. I'm like, whoa, engine one, you're in the collapse zone.
Well, with that, and there's another tool called, it's a geofencing tool. So you could actually build that fence so that as soon as someone walks in.
But they get an alert?
It alerts.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it alerts right on the commander's screen. So now all of a sudden, if someone walks into a dangerous area, it'll show up on their screen and they can have them talk to them about getting removed from that spot right off the bat. Also, they would have be notified.
Yeah,
that,
everybody
they're in. Yeah, and yeah. Everyone would.
Again, all those rigs.
Walked into,
yep. And it, yeah, like, it doesn't just do the command screen. It goes every across your entire, everyone who's at that scene, they all get it the same. It's a common operating picture.
But so, the main thing was about the commander scene.
Yeah, the commander scene.
Like, uh-oh, I just have a whole company that just walked into the collapse.
Yeah, exactly.
Get them.
But I would envision, I just know from, you know, being a battalion chief in the Bronx, you know, I show up, I get one other chief in the beginning, right? He's my, what we call ops chief or section chief, or, you know, we call him the all hands chief, but basically he's the fire sector, right? And I know the NIMS people, they have a problem with, we use the terminology sector, but that's just what we, the way we speak, you know. But once you start escalating into a second alarm now, especially a taxpayer or a commercial building or a large H, you know, then we get a safety chief, we get a resource unit leader, we get another chief for attack, then we get the SOC chief, we get the safety chief, we got all these chiefs, you know. I would have to envision that this is pretty now getting a little hands-on. Like, I can't see myself looking at the screen. There's going to have to be another set of eyes watching this.
And that's kind of where we
talk there about also the doesn't systems. Have to be, though. Like there doesn't need to be someone. I mean, it is something for the chief to be able to look down at, or if something happens, to be alerted of something.
Right.
But it is a hands, it can be a hands-free tool. But
right.
It would be advantageous for a department to have someone that is as the accountability officer or someone.
Yeah, like
a safety chief to have this tool, yeah, in front of
what we call in New York the resource unit leader, right? Mm-hmm. He's in charge of handling all the resources. So mm-hmm. as they come in, they report into the resource unit leader, and he tells the chief, hey, you know, I got two engines right here in staging. That's a perfect guy to be kind of watching.
Well, I was even going to say, you could set up a geofence, and he could be alerted that they're in staging, so then he could see, hey, look, we got them in staging right now, and you would actually, as an IC, could right. just glance out and see it. But you kind of, real quick, I want to touch on one thing you did mention, like with the smoke in front of the building, and you can't see. One of the chiefs, John Riker, that we work with, he always says it's always a sunny day in Florida. Because when you're looking inside Florian, you could see the front of the building, you right. can see it, and it's even if it's, you know, 3 a.m. and it's pitch black, you still have a beautiful sunny view of the structure that you're going to. So I just want to press
it. So did I touch on all the attributes of what it does now? Did I miss anything, or is there other things I didn't talk about?
Well, just going into a little more with the geofencing tool, like Patrick just said, you could use that for rehab also. You yeah. could set up a rehab area. Also, the other big part with that is using the same geofencing tool to give an amber alert. So now we have the ability to give an amber alert. If you have like a big H-type building right next to another H-type, and you don't want those people coming out of the street because they're where you want them to shelter in place, you can do an amber alert for that one building right next to it. And then push it out for people to just stay there. So you can give that message. And directly from the command post, you would geofence that building and do that. Also, though, if it was a bigger area, and let's say you have a major gas leak and you need to evacuate mm-hmm. people, you could use that geofence tool, cordon off a whole area. Right. And now every person in that area will get their cell phones will ping. That there's an amber alert that they need to start self-evacuate
yeah.
right off the bat. And that, I mean, just look at what's going on in wildland fires too. If the wind shifts and starts going right. for a whole another village or something, you can start them evacuating much sooner. Because right yeah. now it takes roughly over 50 minutes for an amber alert to go through. We have the ability to give the incident commander that power to give, they would take a course and then right from that point, they can give an amber alert, and it cuts that time tremendously.
Right. You know, it's funny that you should say that, because I could have used this last year. I had a fire. It was this really hot summer day, right? So we all know when it's hot, like 80 and, you know, 90 degrees, and we have that what we call reverse stack effect, right? So yes. It's hotter mm-hmm. outside. The smoke doesn't rise, and then it kind of pushes back down. Like, I've had fires where I pulled up and smoke is like pouring. I just had one probably 2 weeks ago where the smoke was pouring out the front door in this project building, this high-rise building. And last year I had a pretty, it was like a non-event. It was like a what we call a compactor fire, right?
Right.
It used to be an 18 when we were firing, right?
Yes.
It was one and one and no big deal. Well, what happened was it was a really, really hot summer night. And I arrive on scene and there's like, there had to be 100 people out in the street in front of the building and another 100 in the back. And some guy comes up to me very like proud of himself. He says, "Chief, just, you know, I evacuated like everybody. I banging on yeah. doors, you know?" And the smoke was like, I'm telling you, like I was getting guys reporting like they couldn't see the hand in front of their face in the hallways. Because mm-hmm. what happens is the smoke just sits in a building, you know? So what should have been a very innocuous rubbish fire in a compactor chute turned into a major ordeal where I needed like a ventilation unit and all this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, if I had that amber alert mm-hmm. and everyone gets a ping on their cell phone, hey, listen, it's a small fire, stay in your apartment, it's all good. I think we sent at that fire 10 people to the hospital with smoke inhalation, which should have been nothing. It should have been like a...
It should have stayed in their apartment.
Just a little rubbish fire, you know, knock it down in the chute and that's it. End of story, you know. And here I am now, I have medics come in and it's becoming a big ordeal because everybody decided to leave their apartment, you know. And in these high-rise buildings, you know, I have to say, you know, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the whole world watched those two buildings fall down, right? And, you know, up until then, you know, it's amazing, like, that people don't understand what it means to live in a fireproof building, right? A building that's fireproof means that the fire is not going to extend through the floors. It's not going to extend anywhere. It's not going to get to any voids. You're in a concrete box, and it's all these like boxes on top of each other. And, you know, the biggest problem is the smoke, right? But what happens on 9/11 is that the whole world watched these two buildings collapse. Mm-hmm. And that probably set us back centuries, you know, I mean, because people now, they just hear a siren and they're ready to jump out windows. And I'm not exaggerating.
No.
We had a fire, when was it? No, just recently. It was like within the last 3 months where it was a fire in a fireproof building. And we had to physically restrain people from jumping out the windows.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's because they have this kind of mindset now that, oh, well, this building's on fire, man. This is bad. We're stuck. And, you know, unless it's in your apartment, right? We all know that. We're firefighters, that you're basically good, you know. And so I see a lot of value in this Amber system that you work. I really would encourage you.
I pause Amber Alert. Right.
I would really encourage you to really tout that to the departments that you're going to be working with, because especially, you know, along the East Coast and even the West Coast, but especially like in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, we have all these coastal, along the intercoastal with all these high rises, tons of them, you know. And I mean, you know, they get a fire in there and, you know, it's like, it's panic, you know. And how reassuring is that to get a call from the fire department? Like we have to do this manually now in the FDNY. Like what happens is, I'll be in my car, and as I'm going from my firehouse to where the high rises are, I get calls from the dispatch. All right, Bronx to Battalion 3, we get reports of 19K, 14 George, you know, 7 Larry, all these apartments, people calling, they were all just dying for information. You know, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And this sounds to me like, you know, we could really use this to our advantage. You know?
Yep. Yeah, and it doesn't have to be evacuation or shelter in place. There are other messages where we could send to.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It doesn't have to be. It's not just those two. And especially certain areas, as we know, all over the states, every department has their own challenges and certain aspects that of emergency work that not New York City or Boston or Atlanta have. So you could actually customize that and have it for whatever you might need.
Okay.
So that's the other point of that, which is really,
you know, I see some value too, as we're speaking, I'm thinking about your geofencing, and I was part of that 300 firefighter officer cadre that went down to New Orleans after Katrina.
New Orleans.
My favorite, my second favorite city now is New Orleans. And, you know, when we got there, I mean, it was a disaster. I mean, that the place was flooded. The hydrants were like underwater. I mean, it was a disaster, and the hydrants were out of service. And that's a whole other story what we did down there. But, you know, what I did see was that the USAR teams that came in, you know, they have to use they put up the squares doors, yeah. And then they mark them and searched, stuff like that. Yeah. Searched and not searched and victims and hazards and et cetera, et cetera. And I could see. And then I became, you know, I became a member of the incident management team. I'm an ops, I'm a div soup or an ops section chief. And, you know, we do everything with maps. Like we have a physical map, and I used to have to update it every day. We have what we call incident action plan. And we have to look at, you know, incident action plan. We have to see which divisions are where and branches and whatnot. And You know, and I remember, like, especially after Sandy, we had to physically go back to the ops tent, and we had maps all over the room, and we were physically, like, crossing off areas that we searched and mm-hmm. took care of. And it's a very laborious, like, I'll give you an example, talk about technology, right? So when we first got started on Sandy, right, we had to canvas everybody that in the affected zone. So it was Rockaway, it was parts of Brooklyn, Staten Island, everything that was like kind of south.
Right.
And we had thousands of sheets of paper, right? Like this, it was a form and it had to be filled out. Hmm. And then someone said, we're working on getting every firefighter a tablet, like a little iPad or something like that. And they put that form on the tablet, and the efficiency level went from like, it was just exponential. Mm-hmm. Like how efficient we were, like all of a sudden these stacks that had to be manually sorted and checked out, now we're all going into a central data bank, you right. know? Mm-hmm. So I saw firsthand technology like helping us big time, like mm-hmm. we had instantly, we knew exactly who was accounted for, who wasn't accounted for, but yet we still had to manually mm-hmm. Work off the maps and had to kind of and cross people off.
And like you said, that's a key point with disasters are on the rise, right? And we see that all the time, whether it's natural, you know, a lot of natural events are happening. And it's important to have everyone on the common operating picture.
Right.
So now as people come in with something like Florian, you can see the mutual aid companies if they're connected with it. Or if we're connected with FEMA, we can give out the Florian.app so that for this event, now everybody is seen. Yep. And instead of guessing where these other companies are or sending somebody somewhere, but not knowing if they got there or how well they're doing in that spot.
I think that like a piece that I would be remiss to not talk about though when we're talking about this is that Florian can work off grid, yes. 100% off the internet. So I would assume that down in Katrina, infrastructure was probably challenged
zero.
To say the least.
Zero. Yeah.
So it's one thing to have a map, and I'm sure people listening are probably thinking, cool, but if I'm just by myself with my own digital map, what good is that? We are very conscientious of that. We started with people like yourself to influence that when things are tough, you got to make sure these things work. So Florian keeps working. Everything is completely enabled off-grid. It's all native to the computer. You don't need a web browser and all that. And then what's also good is we'll share that information to anybody who's close, irrespective of the internet. You know, one thing that's interesting, you think about like everyone thinks that like GPS doesn't work for them. Most of the time, GPS definitely works. It's the internet that is challenged to share that GPS information. The satellites aren't affected. The infrastructure on the ground is. So we can take that information, we can find where you are, and we can share that with each other. And we can do it wirelessly in a way that does not require the internet. Really important for us. We're going to be doing some exercises with the Navy actually at the end of the month. They're taking us into the woods, but similar challenges of no internet and make sure that everybody has that common operational picture.
Yeah. And to actually expand on for Katrina, at base camp, you guys drew out all your zones, all your search areas and everything. Since then when you leave and you go off grid, those zones don't disappear. They're still there. So now you're not going to go and research a building that was already searched. Right. You can see where you are, and you can see where the search zones are, and you can draw, okay, I searched this one, this one, this one. And then when you go back, as what Ryan said, it will sync up. And so then command, when you go back to base camp and you connect to their LAN, mm-hmm. then they get all your data, your pathway, everything that you did when you're off grid. Now everyone could see it for tomorrow. Now they say, okay, our search zone grew by this. These buildings still need to be searched. And when people go offline again, they still know where they've been and what they're doing.
Yeah. And it's also something that's amazing with the system is that it's also replayable. Mm-hmm. So any incident that you have, you can go back to after it's even shut down. So let's say you have a certain pre-fire plan that you have for a building. Now you can go back and see how did our pre-fire plan work at this particular fire? Was it, you know, did it help out? Do we need to augment it or change any part of our pre-fire plan? But it also is for training. Now you could also see, all right, what did everyone and how did they get to their positions? What response did we have? And now you can go back to that and just see how everyone did. And now you can use that as a training tool and bring everyone back together and say, listen, this is the job we had. Let's rewind it. And then let's take a look at where everyone went, what everyone did. And it just, it's just going to make better firefighters all the way around.
So guys, tell me what's next for Florian? What's some of the technology? How are we doing with the, I guess when I met you guys, it was really all, it was all about tracking. And now we got into this, which is phenomenal, but we still have the, is the tracking on the back burner or is it still being?
No, the tracking is very, you know, and I think what we can even finish up in an interesting way of what you started, where we talked about, don't forget you're making my job harder, which by the way, I've said to Patrick a million times should be tattooed on my arm because you said that to me. You go, I appreciate that you're focused on this, but don't forget you're making my job harder. And it never has left me. So I think about that all the time. And now when we're talking about tracking is where things get really complicated because there's a lot of information and how can we transform that so we're not making your job harder. And at the end of the day, there's a couple of things that are important to us. One is there are different devices. There are different sources of information that are available. They're not available in the same place. And that's a problem. When you as a chief have to go back and forth between different sources of information, we were out in Australia and the guy, one of the chiefs was showing me, he had a list of very cryptic identifiers that represented different radios. And he had to cross-reference that with printouts from his HR system, trying to map who was doing what based on writing position, trying to connect all these dots while things are happening. Yeah. That's just lazy man's technology. Like that's not what technology is here to help you do. It's good at doing those things, pulling all that data. What do you need to understand about, oh, this is this writing position or even this person. Don't worry about all the data sources that are underneath it. So to answer your question about tracking, one part that we look at, you know, we're talking about, you know, how we solve these. I think a lot of times you hear this idea of like a silver bullet, like this one magical thing that's going to solve it for everyone. And then you work with agencies that work with other agencies and you realize, well, what happens when you have it and the next guys don't? Now the IC is only seeing 50% of the operation acutely, wow, 100%. And then these guys are completely dark. So you start realizing it's not about a bullet, it's about an arsenal. We got to make sure to put everything together. So to answer that, we're looking and we're partnering actually with a bunch of people that are here too to bring all of this information together. To ultimately, again, roll up to that's Patrick, that's Steve, that's Danny, and not forcing you as the incident commander to need to understand what that means. So what does that mean with regards to tracking? We can get tracking from different things and we need to, right? It depends on the situation. Sometimes this particular technology makes sense. Sometimes it's this one, it's that one, right? Bringing all those things together is the number one goal right now. And we're partnering with quite a few people out there on the floor that some people might have in the old days said, like, they're your competitors. I said, no, they're going to be our partners because if we're here to solve a problem, if we're here to help people, we need to do it together because there are times when that solution is going to work. When that, like, you know, for example, something that's mounted to a breathing apparatus, perfect until you're not using a breathing apparatus. Now what? Right. And so I think there's that you got to bring all of these things together and make sure that it's fluid for you. Where's Steve? That's it. So that's really what we're focused on right now. We've got some good partnerships. We're doing some big operational exercises, multi-agency, some big kind of sporting events and some big high scale things. And it's all about bringing all that stuff together and handing it to someone like you and says, is this simple?
Right.
Do you understand what's happening?
So and, as far as the present now,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't know if you're allowed to disclose, but is there any departments that are right now piloting this stuff or using it or going to be in the near future? Or?
Yeah, we have several using them. I mean, to your point, I don't necessarily have press clearance per se, but I'm, you know, at the end of the day, definitely some that I think all of us listening will understand and know. And
some big cities, I understand.
Yes, sir. Yes. But I'm loyal to a fault, as you know, you guys have all commented about a million times over. So, you know, I want to make sure to not, you know, kind of drag that out, but definitely it is about high scale. It's about low scale or small scales too. Right. Patrick's from a volunteer department. You know, that's a huge amount of the fire service, you know, over 70%. So we're making sure that the big guys are being covered and the small guys too. So we're really busy with rolling out with all of those different departments. But the reason why we talked about things we talked about today is because as we work with these departments, you realize, hey, we need to get this whole infrastructure moving. And I think that starts with the vehicle. Everyone's got one. They all operations do. That old thing can actually do a lot of good things. So let's get that going. And then once we get into the firefighter tracking piece, which we have, but it's less complicated because the rest of the system is part of your SOP. There's a lot of change. I was speaking with a chief last week and he was showing me all the training books, firefighter 1, 2, all the officer training books. He's like, show me one page in any of these books that talks about technology. And he's like, there's not one. So everybody spends, you know, their career progressing through the ranks and doing amazing things. And now they're being handed technology. That's a challenge. So I think it's about starting from the ground and growing our way into it instead of throwing all of that right off the cuff and not having people ready to use it, to your point, to making things simpler, not more difficult.
Also with what he was talking about too, with you know, just to go back one with the businesses, everyone used to operate or does operate in their own silos, and they won't feel like they didn't share. They just wanted their product to be the one, right? But meanwhile, it was lacking. Everyone's product is lacking. And I think one of the great things about what we're trying to do with Florian is integrate with many different technologies and take in and make it everybody. Because as we've said before, not one company is going to solve this.
Yeah.
It's going to take like multiple. Yeah. And it's the whole, like, it takes a village type of a
And thing. This is, to me, is of, like, importance beyond scale. So, I know we're almost at that hour mark, and I want to kind of wrap this up. So you guys are here at booth 516.
Yes, sir.
Booth. So just to, I'm spending the next month probably going to be on my bike. I'm going from Naples, Florida to Ground Zero. We're coming in on September 11th with this Brotherhood ride, and we're raising money for, I'm honoring the guys that are dying from cancer from 9/11. And we're helping out a group called the Friends of Firefighters. Mm-hmm. Nancy Carbone, she does an incredible job of helping guys with PTSD. And the monies that I'm raising is going towards her group. But you guys were gracious enough to, we got this coin. It's a Dublin Fire Brigade / New York City FDNY Ground Zero, you know, World Trade Center coin. And if people come visit you at booth 516, and they come and say hello and get a little chat, we're going to give them a coin. You guys have agreed to donate some money to my good friend Nancy, huh?
100%, sir.
I think that's pretty phenomenal. You're going to give some $5 a coin to Nancy, and I think that is just
So as people come in and they can tell us, you know, they could come by, talk to us about different situations that they've been in, especially if they were in a leadership role trying to go through, you know, where Florian could have helped them, especially, then, you know, that's great. They can come by and we'll give them a coin and then donate and donate $5.
Smallest thing we can do.
You're going to be there, right?
Yeah. I'll be there for the whole time.
Yeah.
And I'll be happy to give a coin out to whoever wants to come by, because I think it's a great cause. And I think what Nancy's doing is unbelievable. Then I'm doing a second ride to just add to the insanity and work with the FDNY 343 guys. So we're, I got some shirts too, but I sold out already. But anyway,
we'll track Danny and Florian, and we'll see him.
So I'm doing 2,000 miles of biking. So anyway, guys, good luck. I mean, I know I'm still on the sidelines. You know, I'm still ready. You know, just I'm waiting for that.
go to the bullpen.
I'm waiting for the lefty, the righty. I'm waiting for the call, but it's okay. I'm in no rush. I still love what I'm doing. So with that, guys, again, thank you for being here. I know I see two Anthony's out there very patiently trying to get here. So I'm afraid of them. So I think we're going to have to cut this off. But anyway, until then, we'll see you again. Be safe. And I'll see you on the fire floor, I guess.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Danny. Thanks.
Thanks, Danny.
All right.